following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It is Friday, May 14th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to our next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Coming to you live and direct from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo. It's a way of life. And joining me from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, home of the Goonies, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Never say die, Stashers. Never say die.
Never say die. We're going to roll your levels down just a little bit more there, Carrie. You're a little distorty, but glad to have you here. It is a gorgeous day here in Potland. I'll bet it's just as nice out on the coast.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I'm actually looking at some sailboats dotted out along the Columbia today. It's a beautiful, beautiful sight.
Oh, beautiful sight, which contrasts tragically with what we're going to be discussing on today's show. This is from the Portland Tribune, available now on newsstands all across my hometown here, the Portland Tribune. It's the free biweekly paper. A story called, Need a Transplant? Give up medical pot. It's the story of one of our activists here in the state, Jim Klar, who is forced to go without medical marijuana for 6 years now, even though he's a legal patient, because the local hospitals here will not give organ transplants to someone who tests positive for THC. We'll be talking about that at the end of our show here, 45 after the hour, with Dr. Greg Carter from Washington State, as well as Douglas Hyatt, an attorney who has been working to secure the rights of medical marijuana patients to organ transplants. So please, I want to encourage everyone to stay tuned for that discussion. We may even take it long today. But before we get to that, Cannabis Carrie brings us our headlines right after this first break. What's in the news today?
Well, the first story, even though it's sad because we're going to talk about the Mark Emery case, but I'm really enjoying the protests that are happening in Canada over that. We're going to talk about that. Of course, we're going to look at the AP story that came out yesterday or the day before. I can't remember. I think the day before, about the failed drug war. And then, of course, we have our Friday updates. I've got a couple of questions that I'm going to be addressing that the Stashers have been asking, and two short stories that we're going to look at.
All right. Sounds good, Carrie. We'll have you back right after our first break. Also today at 20 after the hour, we'll be visiting with Eric Smokesbud from Madison, Wisconsin. He's got our Rockin' Friday Daily Toker tune today from Buckethead, a song called Three Fingers. We're going to rock out today. And at half past the hour, it is our second Friday of the month, and that means it's time for our High Times magazine preview. We'll be previewing the latest issue, which is on your newsstands today, with Hybrid Hydro and new interview, with Cypress Hill. So all of that is coming up here on your Normal Show Live. So stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. Make sure to visit our sponsors. Check out our blog at stash.normal.org and click on their ads. Even if you're not going to buy anything, click on the ads. That helps us to get more advertising for the show and to continue to bring you this live daily weekday program for you, the cannabis community. We're right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Canadian protesters have begun the fight against Mark Emery's extradition to the United States. Emery is awaiting extradition to serve a 5-year sentence in the U.S. for selling cannabis seeds online, many to U.S. citizens. Yesterday morning, activists from the British Columbia Marijuana Party visited the office of Conservative Heritage Minister James Moore, and with megaphones in hand, the small group gathered around the front counter and informed the secretary that they would be spending the day in their office protesting. They sang chants, shouted drug war facts through a megaphone, and pulled out 200-gram bags of marijuana and even rolled joints on the office counters in protest. When the police showed up, they were going to arrest the protesters for assault by trespassing, but after a few minutes of debate and negotiations, the police stood down, checked everyone's medical marijuana cards, and let the protesters continue in the MP's office, a space that is considered public property in Canada. The protesters said they were able to speak with the two officers on hand about LEAP and called the officers unusually enlightened, even exchanging email addresses. As the day progressed, one of the protesters noticed that the office door for Minister James Moore was open and the activist filed into his office and began rolling joints on his desk. After a few hours, the protesters left without incident. The group plans more protests in individual MP offices. Also in Canada, a 24-hour day prison vigil is being held on the front lawn of the North Fraser Pretrial Center, where Emery is being held, awaiting extradition that may happen today, this weekend, or early next week. Here in the States, Vivian McPeak, the director of Seattle's HempFest, is planning a rally outside of the federal building in Seattle on Saturday, May 22nd from 2 to 4 p.m. They are working out the event permit, but plan on proceeding with a peaceful protest against the United States' overreaching authority to prosecute a foreigner and imprison him for 5 years for a crime that his own country has decided is too small to pursue.
Wow. Great news out of Canada. The protesters up there for the marijuana party. Congratulations to you. That's very clever. I love the rolling the joints on the desk of the MPs. That's a beautiful thing. And under Canada's medical marijuana law, I believe they're allowed to have up to 200 grams. Isn't that right, Carrie?
Yeah, they're allowed to have 200 grams. And I believe CannabisCulture.com has some pictures of these guys in their marijuana T-shirts holding their giant bags of weed. And you can see the police officers in the background sort of looking on disapprovingly. It's great.
Yeah, 200 grams. That's about 7 ounces, if I'm not mistaken. And that's just a beautiful thing, you know, to have the cops there in the picture. It reminds me a little bit of when the Berlin Wall fell and just all of a sudden it was no longer, you know, a barrier for the East Germans and the West Germans, and the whole world changed overnight based on the fall of that wall. I think we'll see more actions like this, very similar actions of civil disobedience, and I encourage everyone to find creative ways of getting our point across.
And after 40 years and $1 trillion, that's with a T, $1 trillion spent, the United States war on drugs is a dismal failure, according to an Associated Press report out yesterday. U.S. drug czar Gil Kerlikowske conceded that the strategy hasn't worked. Drug use is more rampant and violence more brutal, despite the money and time invested. Kerlikowske was quoted as saying, "In the grand scheme, it has not been successful. 40 years later, the concern about drugs and drug problems is, if anything, magnified and intensified." This week, President Obama's promise to, quote, reduce drug use and the great damage it causes with a new national policy that he says treats drug use more as public health issues and focuses on prevention and treatment. Though his words sounded good to battle-weary activists, nevertheless, the Obama administration has actually increased spending on interdiction and law enforcement to record levels, both in dollars and in percentage terms. This year, $10 billion of his $15.5 billion drug control budget will be spent on enforcing it. Kerlikowske, who coordinates all federal anti-drug policies, says it will take time for the spending to match the rhetoric. "Nothing happens overnight," he said. "We've never worked the drug problem holistically. We'll arrest the drug dealers, but we leave the addiction." His predecessor, John P. Walters, takes issue with that. Walters insists society would be far worse today if there had been no war on drugs. Drug abuse peaked nationally in 1979, and despite fluctuations, remains below those levels now. Judging the drug war is complicated, records indicate marijuana and prescription drug abuse are climbing while cocaine use is way down. Seizures are up, but so is availability. President Nixon, who signed the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act in 1979, had a budget of $100 million. Of course, that has now climbed to the $15.5 billion today. Just in some context, we have spent $33 billion just in marketing to the Just Say No style messages to America's youth. High school students report the same rates of illegal drug use today as they did in the 70s. And $450 billion has been spent to lock up people in federal prisons alone. It seems that after costing taxpayers a fortune, the drug war has achieved none of its goals it set out to and has destroyed countless lives that we can never place a monetary value on. Russ?
Well, the drug war hasn't succeeded at any of its stated goals, but some of its unstated goals, like providing jobs to police and prison guards and people that construct prisons and giving a great exception to the Bill of Rights to law enforcement authorities that want to eavesdrop on us and seize our property, it's been more than successful at that. Talk about restricting the rights and taking away the voting rights of minorities, having a ready prison labor workforce. It's been fantastically successful at that. I'm putting some graphs up here on our webcam that just kind of show more of this futility of this war on certain American citizens, which has gone on now. The war on drugs has gone on for 40 years when all of the wars in the 20th and 21st century combined, we're talking World War II, World War I, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, Gulf War, all of them combined from the 20th to the 21st century only took 33 years. 40 years of drug war versus 33 years of every other war we've had, and it's a war on our own American citizens. Well, President Obama says he wants to put more toward treatment and prevention versus law enforcement and interdiction. But as Kerry points out, almost two-thirds of the budget goes for law enforcement and interdiction compared to about $5.6 billion for treatment. The rates of marijuana use, both monthly and daily, have remained virtually the same over the past 20 years. The rates for teenage use, child use, have been just about the same since 1970, since we started this ridiculous war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. I'm just glad the AP was finally able to put that up.
And a few anxious stashers have been asking me about Ohio House Bill 478 that would legalize medical marijuana in Ohio. I spoke with the assistant to Representative Kenny Yuko, who sponsored the bill, and gave me an update about the legislation. So far, it is sitting in the House committee, and they're responsible for putting it on a schedule for a hearing where the sponsors of the bill get their shot at explaining the need for the legislation and urging members to vote for it. The House committee could pass on a hearing for it, and the bill would essentially die without ever getting a House vote. Representative Yuko's assistant said that even though the clock was ticking and even though they haven't heard a peep from the House committee, she was pretty sure they would give them at least one hearing on the bill because there is so much interest on it, and because they have been introducing some kind of medical marijuana legislation for a few years, and they usually give them at least one hearing. She did say that the support of Ohioans who want the state to recognize medical marijuana has been amazing, and they field calls about this specific legislation regularly. We will give you an update if they schedule a hearing.
We've got to get them to schedule a hearing, folks. Get on your phones, get on the fax machines, send handwritten letters to these officials in Ohio. You can get the information at normal.org. Look for our Take Action Center. I'm sure we've got an alert up for the state of Ohio.
Operating a nonprofit medical marijuana cooperative or dispensary in Long Beach, California is about to get expensive. Real expensive. This week, the Long Beach, California City Council approved fees and charges as part of the Medical Marijuana Collective Implementation Plan managed through the Department of Financial Management. The initial application fees, according to the Director of Finance, Lorianne Farrell, are designed to recover costs of several city departments incurred while processing the application. Those departments include financial management, police, fire, health, and development services. The revenue will be dispersed to the departments proportionately. Now, the proposed initial application fee for any marijuana collective is $14,742. If there is an additional application for a separate cultivation site, that will cost you another $11,584. So that $26,326 is only the first payment that the city requires. Depending on the number of patients and starting at $10,000 annually for organizations with fewer than 500 or fewer members, you can pay a lot. And if you have more than 500 members, the fee can jump to $20,000 and then on up to even $30,000 annually. Unbelievable.
Yeah, this is just the backwards way they're going to go against the will of the people who voted in Prop 215. They're going to either try to zone you out of existence or price you out of existence. This is ridiculous. I can't imagine it being used for any other business. Maybe liquor stores might have bigger fees or costs. But if you're going to open up a pharmacy or a convenience store, or, hell, even a gun range, I can't see this much hassle.
And the last story that we're going to cover today, it's an update on that shocking raid in Columbia, Missouri that happened earlier this year and resulted in an American family being terrorized and the family pets being shot, has had thousands of internet viewers up in arms about the all too common practice of SWAT teams conducting dangerous raids and killing pets. The video of the raid has gone viral with over a million hits on YouTube and hundreds of thousands of views on other websites after being posted online for only 2 weeks. Stashers were asked about the origins of the video and who shot the footage and why the police would ever let it see the light of day. Well, the SWAT team raids are routinely taped. In case someone is shot, they will use the tape in court, presumably to defend themselves, not incriminate themselves. In this case, the video was released by request of the local media and was handed over with no audio. The Columbia Tribune then used the Freedom of Information Act to get the full video with audio included. Columbia, Missouri Police Chief Ken Burton, who has had to schedule multiple press conferences due to the interest on the case, was asked what he learned from all the international attention generated by the video. His reply, quote, "I hate the internet," unquote. The family involved, the Whitworths, have yet to file a complaint with the department concerning the incident.
Yeah, hate the internet. Yeah, blame the messenger. It's so awful when people can see in the light of day what you guys are doing in the cover of darkness behind shields and automatic weapons. Yeah, it really is a shame that people have to know that that's actually going on in Columbia, Missouri, and in countless towns all across this country. There is a piece out on the Drug War Chronicle. I've got part of it posted at stash.normal.org that points out that tomorrow is National Law Enforcement Memorial Day. And while nobody here wants to see cops get hurt or injured, their position that they have to use SWAT teams to do drug raids is completely false. The statistics have shown here, according to that very own National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, that between 78 and 88, an average of 6.5 officers were killed in the line of duty serving drug warrants. In the following decade, it was 6.2. In the last 10 years, an average of 4.3 officers killed each year enforcing the drug laws. What is clear here, the odds of an officer being shot at by a drug defendant, and of course this would be much lower if we're just talking about marijuana, this is all drugs, the odds of an officer being shot at are 1 in 350,000. And that's why they're justifying sending in armed SWATs into our homes, killing our pets, terrorizing our families, and destroying our possessions because we supposedly are violent criminals. But you all know we're not, and this time proves it, right? 20 after the hour, we all get mellow, we all chill out, and we prove to ourselves and the rest of the world just how mellow we are. We'll be right back after these messages.
It's 20 after the hour. We have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Five of the last seven people to run for president and the last three winners have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our pod-safe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday, our segment featuring the best rock, metal, punk, and jam band music. Brought to you by Eric Smokesbud in Madison, Wisconsin. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Brian Patrick Carroll, better known as Buckethead, is an American musician, songwriter, and virtuoso. He has released 29 solo albums and performed on over 50 more. His music spans such diverse areas as progressive metal, thrash metal, funk, electronica, jazz, bluegrass, and avant-garde music. When performing in his theatrical persona, Buckethead used to wear a KFC bucket on his head, emblazoned with an orange bumper sticker that read Funeral in capital black block letters, and an expressionless plain white costume mask. More recently, he has switched to a plain white bucket, no longer wearing the KFC logo. He also incorporates nunchaku, robot dancing, and toy trading into his stage performances. Buckethead's persona represents a character who is raised by chickens and has made it his mission in life to alert the world of the ongoing chicken holocaust in fast food joints around the globe. Although a multi-instrumentalist, Buckethead is best known for his electric guitar playing. He has been voted number 8 on the list of Guitar One magazine's top 20 greatest guitar shredders of all time, has been included in Guitar World's list of top 25 weirdest guitar players, also known for being in the 50 fastest guitar players of all time. Even though many of his songs are not specifically about cannabis, in fact, I have yet to find one. However, in this editor's opinion, you can't be making this insane music and not have a green muse. Here's Buckethead and Saul Williams with Three Fingers.
Fingers on a swollen hand beside a dented garbage can. A blind man staring at something only he can see. I spotted him like night sky plotted him. Starstruck sits alone. He's at home, rafted in a sea of blackness. Three fingers on a swollen hand beside a dented garbage can. A blind man staring at something only he can see. I spotted him like night sky plotted him. Starstruck sits alone. He's at home, rafted in a sea of blackness. He rattles his cup just enough to call your bluff. You can't pretend you didn't see him. Catch his smile in the rear view. Out of the blue, his guitar empty and hard with three fingers he plays. Praise what he says might scare you. Beside a dented garbage can, a blind man staring at something only he can see. I spotted him like night sky plotted him. Starstruck sits alone. He's at home, rafted in a sea of blackness. He rattles his cup just enough to call your bluff. You can't pretend you didn't see him. Catch his smile in the rear view. Out of the blue, his guitar empty and hard with three fingers he plays. Praise what he says might scare you.
Get that thing right from me. I will kill you. I will kill you. You know I'm ill. You better not cross me.
You better not cross me. Cross your heart and hope. Or dream. Or fear. Or pray. I say. In front of me, boy.
Three fingers on a swollen hand beside a tinted garbage can. A blind man staring at something only he can see. I spotted him like night sky, plotted him. Starstruck sits alone. He's at home, wrapped in a sea of blackness.
He rattled his cup just enough to call your bluff. You can't pretend you didn't see him. Catch his smile in the rear view. Out of the blue, his guitar has an heart. With three fingers, he plays. Plays what he says, my skin. With three fingers, he plays. Plays what he says, my skin.
Can't go wrong with that. That's Buckethead rocking out here for our Rockin' Friday. Thanks to Eric Smokesbud. Eric Smokesbud up there in Madison, Wisconsin. We appreciate it.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Time to check for Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, excuse me, at norml.org/calendar. Tonight, Friday, May 14th, Ohio Normal Spring Encampment takes place at the Crazy River Ranch. Contact Ohio Normal for details. On Saturday, May 15th, Wisconsin Normal's having their statewide meeting. This will take place at Mr. Ed's in Toma, Wisconsin. Check out winormal.org for details. And Kansas City Normal will be having their public meeting at the Westport Coffee House in Kansas City, Missouri. You can check out kcnormal.org for more information or call 888-KC-NORMAL. Coming up next week, a couple of protests coming up for the Mark Emery Freedom Rally. This will be taking place in Seattle, Washington at the federal building there. It's still tentative based on a permit, but I think they'll still be rallying anyway. So Seattle, Washington. Also getting news here on the calendar from Denver, having a free Mark Emery rally at the U.S. Courthouse on Stout Street in Denver. So check out milehighnormal.org for those details. For more information on all of our calendar of events, just check out normal.org/calendar.
Georgia, Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Since 1970, NORML has been fighting for the rights of all adults who use cannabis responsibly. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has been the chronicle of the cannabis community. Every second Friday of the month, we bring that working relationship to the NORML Daily Audio Stash with our special guest, Senior Editor Dave Bienenstock, author of the official High Times Pot Smokers Handbook, for our exclusive monthly preview of this month's issue of High Times.
Welcome back, everybody. 31 after the hour, we're taking a look at this month's High Times magazine. You can see the cover up on the webcam here. This is the July 2010 edition, and Cannabis Carry is working on getting Dave on the line. He's recently moved, so he's no longer at the New York office. We're trying to get him back there in California, so she'll get him on the line here in just a second. But I do want to point out one particular part of the magazine this month, and that is NORML's Freedom Fighter of the Month. It might seem kind of self-serving to make this announcement, but our own Paul Armentano, NORML's deputy director, had never, ever been a Freedom Fighter of the Month, and they've been doing this since 1990. And there is so much that Paul Armentano does for the movement in his studies. He's got these amazing white papers that he writes, The Real World Ramifications of Cannabis Legalization and Decriminalization, where he examines what has happened in the countries that have legalized or decriminalized marijuana. Breathe, Push, Puff, Pot Use in Pregnancy, a review of the literature, takes a look at the fears that pregnant women have or being caught using cannabis to relieve nausea or other symptoms of pregnancy. And Cannabis and Driving, a Scientific and Rational Review, tackles the controversial subject of cannabis use and driving. Great stuff. Check it out up on the normal.org website. All right, so we're going to go now back to our phone lines, and we've got Dave Bienenstock, the senior editor from High Times Magazine, on the line. Dave, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Russ. It's always a pleasure.
Did I make a mistake here? You're on the West Coast now, and we had the wrong number?
You know what? I am now the West Coast editor. So, you're going to have to reach me at my West Coast number, I got to say, I'm enjoying the West Coast life.
Isn't it very, very nice? And, you know, now I don't have to adjust time zones when I think about calling you anymore either. Now, speaking of the West Coast, one of the things that's happening here that High Times is very excited about, and we're very excited about here at NORML Show Live, is the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. That's coming up real soon. So tell our listeners about that and how they can get involved.
Well, first of all, just medcancup.com is the website, so there's a lot of information there. But this is really, you know, we've had the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam for 20 years as a global event, and this is bringing it back to California, to Northern California, and putting the focus on medical patients and really trying to have a way. We have a small panel of experts led by Jorge Cervantes. They're going to be judging the entries from the dispensaries. And then alongside that, we have a huge expo. There's a party Saturday night. you know, lots of vendors, and then great panels all weekend. I've been finalizing some of the seminar panels, and we just are going to have a great representation of this medical marijuana community to speak with people and educate everyone about what's been going on and where the future is going to be heading.
Yeah, that's right. And this is July, am I correct, 19th and or June, excuse me, 19th and 20th in San Francisco.
June 19th and 20th in San Francisco at a place called Terra. It's an excellent facility. We're really happy to be in there. And it should be a great time. And I personally certainly always look forward to meeting the people who are involved in Normal and of course, meeting the people who read High Times allowed me to have a wonderful job. I always look forward to any opportunity to spend time with a big group like that, and this should be a very special occasion.
Oh, absolutely. Normal founder Keith Stopp will be there. I'll be there as well, bringing some live streaming here from Normal Show Live. Folks, also don't forget that this doesn't change the regular High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam. That will still exist. This is just a new cannabis cup, medical cannabis cup for America out here on the West Coast. And Dave, can you give our listeners some look at the differences between the Amsterdam Cannabis Cup and what you're going to be doing in San Francisco?
Sure, that's a great point. I mean, Amsterdam, if you've never been, I'll say one thing before I forget, which is an occupational hazard sometimes. if you can't make it to either cup, you listen to Russ's show, get some of your friends together, and have a little cup of your own is a great, you know, just among your friends and just among whatever anybody may have available. It's a great experience and a great time and a lot more fun than watch TV, so I encourage you to do that while you listen to the program and the broadcast live from the San Francisco Cup. Amsterdam, I mean, the best thing is that you're in Amsterdam. It's an unbelievable city. It's still the only city that it just treats adults like adults when it comes to marijuana, but it's also a beautiful, world-class city. And in Amsterdam, you know, we're able to have all the people who come be part of the judging process because of the laws there. And you go from coffee shop to coffee shop, try the different samples, and you can vote. For the Medical Cannabis Cup, we've assembled a small panel of medical patients who are also experts. That's going to be led by Jorge Cervantes, and we'll have a High Times cultivation team and some other real legends in medical cannabis. And that contest is going to be judged just by that small panel. But we will be posting all the dispensaries that do enter and their entries so that people can certainly decide for themselves.
That's right. Check it out at medcancup.com. You'll find all the information you need. And just taking a look here at the High Times coming out. This should be on the newsstands now. Some great stuff in here. I just came back from Spring Gathering, Dr. Green Thumb and Tommy Chong Spring Gathering, and B-Real was there, and he was great to all the folks there, gave them autographs and sat on a couple panels, even spinned some tunes for us in the VIP section. You've got an interview here with Cypress Hill as far as their new joint, along with Sendog and DJ Muggs. Tell us about that interview and the new record they've got coming out.
Yeah, well, we've been referring to them as the triumvirate, I guess, and they're back. They have a new album. We had a great photo shoot with them. You know, obviously, they've been at this a long time, and I think they're as excited as everybody else to kind of feel the wind at the back of this movement, and, you know, they've been the house band for a while, or certainly one of them. So, you know, it's an exciting time, and it's a great story to catch up with those guys.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dave Bienenstock, the West Coast editor of High Times Magazine, going over the latest issue that's on newsstands today. You can also check it out at hightimes.com if you want to save some paper. And another story you have on here that caught my eye, caught my interest, was Bigfoot in Grow Country. And this is the word of growers out there in the wilderness encountering the Sasquatch.
Yeah. I mean, there's some documented evidence. You'll see an amazing photo of Bigfoot you know, walking through a large outdoor garden. I have to actually say it's a really great story. It really does get into one of our writers on staff went out with a bunch of people who are a big part of the movement of people who are looking for Bigfoot, and you know, he really gets into their different reasons for doing it and the whole history of this and what Bigfoot might mean, and you know, the pictures that go with it to me are just beautiful.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of leave it at that. It's worth reading. It's one of my favorite stories we've done in a while.
Yeah. Any evidence here that Bigfoot prefers indica or sativa?
I just know he's into the outdoor organic. He's a supporter of outdoor organic.
Okay.
Another... I think you're going to catch Bigfoot with some hydro.
Yeah, that's right. Another great story on here details some of our history in America with the CIA LSD attack. Tell people a little bit about that one.
Sure. That's Steve Hager, who is going to be very familiar to longtime High Times readers. And he's looking into the story, and you know, the evidence is all there. This is not conjecture. This is what happened. The CIA ran many experiments with LSD over the years. If anybody smoked a strain called MK Ultra, that was the code name of a lot of those mind control programs. And the story gets into what's really just coming to light now. Happened in 1951 in a French town was apparently the site of a CIA LSD experiment with some really, you know, obviously unhappy results. It's a pretty dark chapter in our nation's history that, you know, it shows that on the one hand, any responsible experiments with psychedelics were suppressed and attacked, and yet the government itself was involved in these crazy, completely unregulated experiments that they didn't even admit they were doing. So it's a great read, and you know, it's nice to say that now it seems like psychedelic research is starting to have a resurgence. The great group called MAPS just had their conference on psychedelic research, and it was covered in a lot of the media, so it's a very timely story, too, I think, right now.
Yeah, I completely agree, and people should check that out in the newest issue, High Times Magazine. It's the July 2010 issue. Dave Bienenstock is the West Coast editor of High Times Magazine, and don't forget to check out MedCanCup.com. Dave, thanks for joining us again.
Always a pleasure, Russ. I'll talk to you soon.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Reefer Madness.
Welcome back, everyone. 43 after the hour, and we're going to talk about a subject that is near and dear to my heart because of our engineer, Ganja John, who can't be with us today. He's injured and in a wheelchair right at the moment, nursing a bad leg. But we'll get him on the air next week, and we'll discuss this some more. But joining us by telephone...
Yes?
I can kick you up.
Joining us by telephone here are some of our guests, Dr. Greg Carter and Douglas Hyatt. Dr. Carter is an expert on these issues, and Douglas Hyatt worked with many medical patients who have been trying to get their organ transplants. And gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Russ.
Hi, Russ. This is Cannabis Carrie. I just wanted to let you know that we don't have Mr. Hyatt on the line.
Okay. Well, we'll go with...
We just have Mr. Carter, so you can ask him as many questions as you'd like.
Okay. Well, we'll go with Dr. Carter. And again, thanks for joining us here. I'm bringing up this issue because of an article that's in the Portland Tribune right at the moment. And this one is about a medical marijuana patient here in Oregon by the name of Jim Klar, who the Oregon Health Sciences University and the Legacy Emmanuel Health System, the transplant center, in this state, will not give him a transplant if he turns up positive for medical marijuana. And I just wanted to discuss with you the science behind that and whether or not that's a reasonable policy. What do you know about this, Dr. Carter, that would help our listeners understand?
Okay. What I know about that is that, in my opinion, is an unethical, prejudicial decision that is not based in any scientific studies that I'm aware of. In fact, there was a study done at the University of Michigan years ago, a retrospective study that followed former liver transplant patients, followed them up retrospectively, and looked at the ones that had actually been using marijuana, and they had outcomes that were as good and somewhat better than the patients that did not. There is no scientific evidence that cannabinoids, the active ingredients of marijuana, in any way impair one's ability to undergo an organ transplantation.
You know, this is a subject we've discussed with Doug Hyatt on the show before. He's a lawyer who defended a man by the name of Tim Guerin, a Seattle area musician who was a medical marijuana patient, who found that medical marijuana was better for him as far as not being toxic to his already damaged liver, at being able to control his nausea and pain. But because of his medical marijuana, was told he needed to have 60 days sober before he could get a transplant. He ended up dying later that week. So with regard to treating transplant patients, Dr. Carter, some of the drugs that we prescribe to them, are they not more harmful to the person than the cannabis that we could give them?
Absolutely, without question. And I've seen many of my own patients actually receive a liver transplant and other and kidney transplants who have been taking enormous amounts of opiates, OxyContin, and some of those preparations also contain Tylenol or acetaminophen in them, and acetaminophen is actually directly hepatotoxic. And, you know, but that apparently is okay with the transplant teams. But if you're using marijuana for some reason, well, they consider it an illicit drug. Of course, that's not the way it is legally, and I would defer to legal experts, but I've seen patients that are legally using marijuana or cannabis under a doctor's authorization that have been turned down, and there's no scientific justification for that, none.
Right, and the defense here, you know, Mike Seeley was the director of transplant and procurement services for OHSU, gives two reasons in the story, and his first reason is one you brought up. The federal law trumps the state law. According to federal law, it's illegal. He says OHU is part of a consortium with Veterans Affairs, and they worry about the federal authorities coming down on them if it allowed state-authorized marijuana users to receive organs. It may be out of your area of expertise. I think it's a legal question here in federal law. But do you have any other instances in hospital work where this is ever a problem, where they worry about the federal government coming down on them?
You know, I have not personally encountered that. But you're right, that's more of an administrative question. But I've never encountered that personally, and I have served as a former chief of staff at one of the province hospitals, and I've had prior administrative roles, and I've never seen that come down. I do know that the VA hospitals, their doctors are not allowed to make authorizations because that system is federally funded. But I would say to that doctor that his license is issued by the state of Oregon, and the state of Oregon has acknowledged the legal use of medical marijuana. So,
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because we found those court decisions recently where some of the states like California, San Diego County, I think it might have been, where they sued to say, well, federal law says it's illegal, so we can't do this medical marijuana stuff. And the courts have always come back and said, no, in this case, you know, you're an officer of the state. You're in charge of, you know, keeping charge of state laws. So I think that would be definitely something to look into there. The other thing that I always point out, too, is that for a long time, the Veterans Administration had a policy of pain contracts, where if you were signed up to get opioid painkillers, OxyContin and such, they would deny you those pain medications if you tested positive for marijuana. In 2009, they made a policy change where they said, if you are an authorized patient, they'll no longer kick you off the pain contract. So it would seem to me, Dr. Carter, that at that level, at least, the federal government's kind of turning a blind eye to medical marijuana use. Why wouldn't that apply in the case of transplants?
I don't know. That's a great question, Russ. And I get referrals all the time from the VA here. I work for the university, but I get referrals from the VA hospital, which is kind of tied into that system. And I authorize veterans. In fact, I've gotten some referrals from Madigan Army Medical Center from their doctors. Their doctors personally can't authorize, but they're willing to send them out to me for an authorization. So I'm not certain why it applies to transplants. And, you know, I do want to emphasize that there is no medical or scientific reason to not allow someone who is using cannabis transplant. There is none. In fact, sometimes you'll hear the transplant people refer to risk of infection with aspergillosis, which is a ridiculous argument because aspergillosis is everywhere. It's on the carpet. It's in the air. It's in the dirt. So whether or not there's aspergillosis in cannabis is a moot point. Mm-hmm. As you probably already know, the cannabinoids actually have some immune modulating positive beneficial effects. I actually think there would be some actual benefit to a transplant patient of using cannabinoids. I know the legal aspects are a little more convoluted, but the medical aspects are very straightforward and very clear. And I think these prior cases where people have been turned down for using cannabis under a doctor's authorization, I just think that's unethical. I think those doctors have broken their Hippocratic oath.
Yeah, well put. And this aspergillosis argument is something I've come down against, too. This for people that don't know, it's a type of a mold. And if you don't cure your cannabis correctly, this mold could, you know, take root in the cannabis. But like the doctor says, it could take root anywhere. And when we look at the actual statistics in the United States and up to 2004, which is the latest I could find, we had 261 deaths in America from aspergillosis, whereas Salmonella or E. coli kill about 5,000 a year. So my point is, if we're going to deny organs based on cannabis use, we should be denying organs to anyone who's not a vegetarian because of the chance of catching Salmonella or E. coli. It's just as ridiculous a proposition.
I agree.
Let me give you another point made by, this was a person named John Niemitz, and he's at the Legacy Health System, the other transplant center that has a similar policy. And in the paper, he's quoted about the infection risk from aspergillosis, but as well says, quote, "There is a risk of altered consciousness," end quote, "which might interfere with a patient's ability to follow a rigorous post-transplant regimen of medications and appointments." Basically saying people would get too stoned to remember to take their pills or go to their appointments. Do you have any comments on that for Mr. Niemitz?
That is ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous and fallacious.
Yeah.
That's my comment.
Yeah, and I got to thinking, you know, when someone gets through with a transplant, there's a regimen of prescriptions they do have to take. Wouldn't some of those prescriptions, especially the painkillers, render someone a little bit more foggy-minded than cannabis ever would?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and according to another thing that Niemitz wanted to point out here is he says that he doesn't think the transplant policy is costing lives. He says, as far as he knows, every cardholder they've dealt with has been willing to give up their medical marijuana as the price of getting a transplanted organ, quote, "people have found that pretty reasonable," end quote. Do you find that at all reasonable, Dr. Carter?
No, I do not. And he's wrong. John Guerin is one good example, and there have been others, people who have lost their lives because they weren't able to get a transplant.
Yeah.
Because they were using cannabis legally with a doctor's authorization. So he's wrong.
Yeah. We are speaking with Dr. Greg Carter from Washington State on the subject of denying organ transplants to medical marijuana patients, legal patients in their states. And we are getting some questions coming in from the chat room here. And Seaweedy, and I believe she's from Canada, is asking about a person-to-person live donation. What if someone was donating a kidney to a loved one and they wanted to give it to the loved one who had cannabis? Would these hospitals be stopping them?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't even know if that's allowed per se. I think there's a pretty regimented protocol. I could be wrong, though, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I've heard anecdotally reports. Our own Ganja John, our engineer, talks about how he's a kidney transplant patient, and how he was called by the hospitals one day to come and get the kidney. They got a donor, and of course, when that happens, you know, you drop everything and you run in. And he gets there, and once he gets there, they tell him that they couldn't actually give him the kidney because the donor tested positive for drugs, and since most positive drug tests are going to be for cannabis, maybe we can assume it was cannabis. So it seems to me they won't even give organs from cannabis users, much less give them to cannabis users. What can we do about this, Dr. Carter? How can we change this policy in these hospitals?
Well, that issue has also been addressed in the medical literature. There was a study out of Chicago, Loyola University in Chicago. Their transplant team looked retrospectively at the outcomes in people who received organs from donors that had a past history of drug use, including marijuana, versus donors that did not. And there was no difference in outcomes. So actually that's been also addressed in the medical literature, and there's no difference between donors that had a history of abuse and those that didn't.
Yeah, this is a shocking story, and we're going to continue to cover it here at Normal Show Live. This denial of medical organ transplants to medical marijuana patients is just a travesty. It's an abomination. Check out the Portland Tribune. You can check it out at portlandtribune.com, and you'll learn the story here of Jim Clark, an Oregon medical marijuana patient who's a legal registered patient who has gone without medical marijuana for 6 years now because of the arm twisting of OHU saying that they won't give him his life-saving liver transplant unless he abides by their rules. The poor guy, they give him all sorts of these prescriptions, doctor, and he's found that they're just not effective. He doesn't get the relief from them like he gets for cannabis, and yet he's made to suffer through this blackmail from OHSU. I really hope we can get it changed, and I really want to thank you for joining us today. If you have any closing things you'd like to tell our audience, this would be the time to do it.
Sure. Well, if there is something particular to cannabis, then why can organ transplant patients or people that are on the list use Marinol, which is 100% THC? That seems to be okay with transplant teams. But if you use a natural plant, which at best has 20% THC, then there becomes a problem. It's unethical. What we're seeing here is unethical and a violation of the Hippocratic Oath, and yeah, it's a travesty, in my opinion.
You're absolutely right. That's the simplest way to put it. And Dr. Carter, again, thank you so much for joining us here and enlightening us on Normal Show Live.
You're very welcome, Russ. Take care.
All right, folks, it is a travesty, and I do encourage all of you to check out that PortlandTribune.com article and write to your local hospitals, write to your local transplant centers, and speak out for all of these patients, like our own Ganja John, whose lives depend on you helping us make a difference. There's not enough transplant patients to make enough noise. We need the whole community to make this noise and say there is no reason to not accept an organ because someone uses cannabis. There's no reason to deny someone from getting an organ if they are using cannabis. Like the doctor said, all of the studies that have taken a look at this have found absolutely no difference in survival rates between people who use cannabis and people who don't use cannabis post-transplant. maintaining this policy is cruel and unusual punishment. It's a violation of everything we hold dear in this country, making sick and disabled people suffer in order to maintain some federal illusion that we're going to be tough on drugs. It's disgusting. It's an abomination. And like Dr. Carter says, it's a violation of the Hippocratic Oath. Doctors, take this seriously. Activists, take this seriously. Get in touch with your local doctor, your local hospital, your local transplant center, and tell them enough is enough. It's time to treat medical marijuana patients like people. I'm Radical Russ. For everyone here at Normal.org, including Cannabis Carry and Ganja John, thanks for joining us this week, all this week, for our live weekday show. We are on the air 1 p.m. Pacific time every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, with replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9 o'clock Pacific time. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.